Magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock. It's a Saturday, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And I'm telling you right now, I could not be more excited about the person that I'm going to be interviewing today for a few different reasons. First of all, this person I've known for quite a little while now, and they are incredible. They have performed at the highest level for many, many, many years. Creator, performer, choreographer, also co-runs a very, very popular magic dealership, one of the most well-known people in the magic community, and somebody I don't think that's had many interviews, that hasn't been on many interviews, and I think this is going to be a super interesting interview. I can't wait to chat to them. I am, of course, talking about one half of Amethyst, the one and only Steph Hunt. How are you doing, Steph? You okay?
I'm good, thank you. You're going to make me blush with that little introduction. That was wonderful. Thanks.
You're amazing. Like we were obviously together at the Ferrybridge Day of Magic, you, me, and Danny. And I said to you, like, I've only known you and Danny properly for a couple of years, but I've known of you for so long, and the amount of people when I was out doing gigs and I was out performing, and people would be like, oh yeah, but have you seen Steph and Danny? That was good, but you need to see Steph and Danny. I'll be honest, I got sick to death of being compared to you and Danny. It was just like, oh, okay, yes, I get it. They're better than me, right? Okay, let's move on, shall we? But you've been in the industry a very long time. You've got, and you do so much behind the scenes that people aren't even aware of. Like, we were talking, and we can talk all about all of this, but we were talking about the science shows that you and Danny are doing at the moment, and out there selling out theaters, and that's because of the marketing that you're doing behind the scenes. You know, there's a lot of people that can't get 10 people in a room, and you're filling theaters with the marketing that you're doing. You're the person that's like the driving force behind Castle Magic, on top of everything else you do, as well as being a mom, as well as doing all of that. Like, people say I'm busy, my head just like spins thinking about every plate that you've got to spin. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's chaotic but brilliant all at the same time. I think my life is just chaos. Actually, before we started this, I just thought, I check my internet browser. I've got 495 tabs open on my phone. That's literally what my brain is like constantly.
Wow.
I know, bad.
Gosh, and we're going to delve into all of that now. Before I start, I do want to point out for anybody, if you've never heard of Steph before, and you go look in the archives on Talk Magic on the podcast or on YouTube, you're going to see about a year and a half ago, I did an interview with Danny Hunt. You and Danny are obviously husband and wife. And Danny talked about things from his point of view. But obviously, the real star in Amethyst is you, Steph. So now we've got Danny out of the way. Now we can talk about, we can speak to the real person behind the scenes. And yes. And I want to talk about all of that. And I want to start off. One question I always ask when I interview people is, what's their origin story? And I have to be honest, most people will say, well, when I was 6 years old, my uncle pulled a coin from behind my ear. It's either that one or it's, well, I got to pull Daniel's magic set. And, you know, it's a variation on the theme. I've got a feeling your entry into magic might be a little bit different. So,
yes, a little bit.
Can you talk about how this all came about?
Yeah, so I'm a dancer. That's what I did, what I loved. My whole life revolved around dance. I lived and breathed it. I was at Pontins. I was working as a blue coat. I'd had quite a bad injury. So my kind of dancer took a little bit of a back step, but I was there as a blue coat dancer, loving life, performing all these shows, learning all these incredible things. And Danny used to come and do his show as a cabaret. I used to watch the show. He will tell the story about how I used to fall asleep and have a nap which I did. It was 45 minutes that I could sit on the floor with the kids and nobody knew that I was having a little nap. It was brilliant. But I knew nothing about magic other than seeing the cabarets that came. We had some incredible people that used to come. But I had no interest in magic. I'd never really delved into magic. I had once danced with Paul Daniels when I was a teenager, and I watched his show from the wings, which was incredible. But at the time, I didn't appreciate that. I was 14. All I wanted to do was go on that stage and do my dance. I wasn't really fussed about this guy that had turned up to do magic, which looking back now is mind-blowing. But then anyway, Danny one day messaged my boss and said, you don't know someone that could cover a couple of gigs, do you? And he said, well, what about Steph? She's not really doing anything at the minute. I'm sure she would cover. So I was meant to do two gigs, and that was 11 years ago. I got bit by the magic bug, literally. My life revolved from being in love with dancing to being in love with magic. And that's kind of how it all started. I'm here now.
That's amazing. That's absolutely Was it difficult to cross over into magic from dance? Because obviously, just for you do a lot of stage magic, you do a lot of illusion shows. So obviously, there's kind of a connection there anyway. It'd be more difficult if you're wandering around a restaurant doing close-up magic with pirouettes. That would kind of probably not fit. But you do a lot of stage shows. But was it difficult to transition at all? Or
it was a learning curve. But I think my dance background definitely helped with my stage presence, my performance, all that was already there. It was just a matter of then learning the magic. So from an illusion point of view, dance is very, very helpful. But then as the years progressed, I've kind of delved into other forms of magic, doing things on my own and all this kind of stuff. So that was 100% a learning curve. It's very, very different from dancing and being on that stage, even just talking on stage. In the science show now, we present and I talk and all these things that I would never have done before. But yeah, dance is definitely a great solid background just from the performance side of things. I think if you have that performance in you and your blood and that love to be on stage, it doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you love it, you can do it.
And before we get into what you've kind of been doing on your own, I want to talk a little bit more about those early days, kind of Amethyst and how it is what we know now. How difficult did you find learning actually? Because obviously, initially, you were going into a lot of boxes. And I don't think that, obviously, I've done illusions for years, so I understand how difficult it is for the person that's going in the box. But I don't think a lot of magicians that have ever had any experience with illusions realize how difficult it is. I remember when I first taught a friend of mine, Tiffany, to go in the boxes, and she spent a day rehearsing, and then she sent me a picture of her legs the next day, and they were purple with bruises. And I don't think a lot of people realize, a lot of people that are maybe not into magic, they just go, oh, she gets in a box and she gets out again. There's so much more to it than that, right?
So much more to it. It's painful, it's hard work, and it's not the same for everybody. So if I got in a box, another girl wouldn't do it the same way. So it's really, really difficult for someone to teach you how to do that trick. Obviously, when I got taught, Danny taught me how to do them, but he'd never been in an illusion before. So it was a matter of me getting in boxes, and I like to call it getting to learn your box. I would sit in it for ages and just find how it worked for me. I'm very tall for being an illusionist, for being an assistant, very tall. So that makes things different for me as well, because I'm 5'8½". That's a lot of legs to cram into a little box. But yeah, it's hard, but good. When you've done it and mastered it, it's such a feel-good feeling. And it's just wonderful. Like, I can't explain how much I love doing illusions. They're just something about them. They just capture you. And yeah, it's great fun. It's better than anything else. I love it.
Oh, I completely agree. And very expensive. I mean, you and Danny have a warehouse that most, you know, I think you've got every illusion that's ever been built, haven't you, at this point? Like, it's just...
We've got a lot, yeah. It's like we've actually just done a kind of a storage unit move, and we're halfway through it. It's taken us days to kind of sort everything and move everything. There's a lot of things in there. It's a treasure trove of stuff.
Wow, that's amazing. And when you talk about illusions, obviously, you've infused dance and illusions, you and Danny and the Amethyst show, there's a lot of dancing in it, obviously, because of your background. How important do you think it is, maybe not for an illusionist, but for a magician who wants to perform on stage? Because I get that question a lot, Steph. A lot of people say to me, mm-hmm. I'm a close-up magician. I want to perform on stage. I want to start doing magic on stage. For somebody who's doing that transition, there's such a world of difference between close-up and performing on stage, regardless of whether doing illusions or not. How important is it to learn about dance and movement and planting your feet and owning the stage and stuff that close-up magicians don't think about because they wander up to a group and then that's it? Like, it's really important, right?
Really important. Not necessarily, you don't need to be able to dance and you don't need to be able to kick your legs around, but just having that ability to stand nicely on stage, to be able to walk without falling over, to get from one side of the stage to another without it looking like you're going shopping and down the shops. It's every little move you do on that stage, people are watching you. And it's so important to be able to just move nicely if you're working with music, to have that musicality and to be able to do things in time. It is so important. You'll have the magic, you have that technique there, which is amazing. That, you know, that's the hard bit, but it's also just as hard to stand on that stage and let the people at the back be able to see what you're doing as well as the people at the front, and to make sure that everyone's involved. I remember Danny teaching me how to look at the audience, and we always perform in like a zigzag. So every single person in that theatre feels like they're involved and feels like they're part of the show, rather than kind of ignoring the people at the back. And Ken Dodd always said, don't forget the people up top. So, you know, you make sure you're looking at those people that are in that circle and not just the people in the stalls, because everyone's paid to be there. It's not just that front row. You have to make sure everyone's involved. And I think dance is helpful very much in that. Just to be able to stand nicely and not be slumped on the stage, because how many magicians kind of trudge on stage and then just stand there and do their little card trick? The card trick's probably absolutely incredible, but nobody can see what they're doing.
No. Yeah. It's amazing advice, and that's so true. And for anybody who's watching this that wants to get into illusions, mm-hmm. I remember speaking to somebody about a year ago, and I was like, if I could go back in time, I'd probably say, Don't bother doing the illusion. There's so much. It's going to cost you. If you think it's hard buying a deck of cards for 50 quid, go and put an illusion act together and realize how much it costs. And then you need somewhere to keep it all. You're going to need a van. You're going to need... Danny's lucky because he's got you, but I find I need multiple assistants because I can't rely on just one. So I need lots of people that are trained to do the show.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hard work, which is why there's very few illusion acts left. You know, I mean, there's not that many. Any advice for people that are wanting to get into illusions and, you know, what you have to do? You know?
Think carefully about it, because like you said, it is a huge investment. So if you're going to go down that route, you're going to love it. It's incredible. But there's a lot of money that goes into that and time that goes into that. And you're not necessarily going to be on a higher wage than someone that's going on single-handedly with their suitcase. It doesn't mean just because you've got all these boxes, you're going to be on 10 times the money. You're not. But if you can do it, it's really, really worth it. It's so much fun. It's enjoyable. You don't need everything. Don't go out there buying every single illusion going. Just start with one and see how you get on. And if you love it, then you can keep adding a few more into your show. And I think that's a good way to do it.
That's great. That's really great advice. And obviously through the years, you've worked on pretty much every stage that there is to work on. Like, you've toured the world, obviously famously yourself and Danny and Amethyst, obviously, spent a lot of time supporting Ken Dodd. Like, mm-hmm. must have so many memories, so many stories. What was it like working with Ken?
Ken was amazing. Ashamedly, when I first started, I didn't know who he was, never heard of him. He wasn't my generation. I just kind of got into the world of magic, so why would I have heard of him? But as I got to know him, so I probably kind of got to know him first, he's got so much knowledge. And then I found out what he had done and who he was, and all these people were talking to me about him. He was amazing, and I'm so grateful for that opportunity that I had to work with him. I think it was, Danny did 15 years, I think. So this is my 11th year, and I must have done about 7 or 8 years with him. And every single show, I learned something from sitting and watching him, how he performed, how he worked that audience, just everything. He was fabulous, absolutely fabulous.
Wow. And what's been your favorite place to perform? With the illusion, we're going to talk about other stuff in a bit, but...
Okay, so it'll probably have to be Blackpool Opera House. It was actually my second ever show, was the first time that I performed at the Blackpool Opera House. For the convention.
About throwing you in at the deep end, right?
Yeah, it didn't really tell me how many people there were going to be and that they were all going to be magicians. So that was scary because I kind of got pulled apart on my second ever show. People would came up to me afterwards and were literally picking, you know what magicians are like. So that was hard all at the same time. But that stage, oh my goodness, it's, yeah, mind-blowing. It's absolutely really incredible. Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool. That's so cool. And I have to ask you this. What's your favorite illusion to perform?
Oh gosh, I love the helicopter. That's amazing. But my favorite illusion we do, it's, we call it the cube. It's a little yellow and black box. It's been in our show the whole time. It's my first ever illusion that I did with Danny. And then we also did it for our first dance at our wedding. We didn't do a first dance. We did a first illusion. So it's very sentimental, but I love it every time we do it. Absolutely love it.
Right. That's awesome. That's so cool. Okay. So I want to ask you one more question. I want to carry on talking about your career and how you kind of transitioned into performing your own stuff. But before I do, one of the questions that I get on the channel all the time that I think you would be uniquely qualified to answer, which is dealing with nerves. The amount of people that I speak to and the question I get over and over again is, I want to go on stage, but just the thought of it scares me to death. I literally sit there with palpitations just at the thought of going on stage. Now, one thing that's kind of defined you through the last 11 years is you've pushed your comfort zone and then some. Like, okay, I'm going to go and do Illusions. What's my second show? I'm going to go and do the Opera House. Why not? Let's do it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do... Nobody would say anything if you never went and did your own thing in the show. If you just carried on going in boxes, nobody would say anything, but then you go and do that. And you're constantly pushing yourself, which is a stressful, nerve-wracking thing to do, especially from somebody that's coming into magic from a dance background. Like, have you got any advice on coping with nerves, especially as you've performed in some of the biggest venues in the world?
Well, it was actually my dance teacher when I was younger told me, if you don't get nervous anymore, there's no point doing it. So nerves are good. They're what drive you. It gives you that kick. So nerves are a good thing and use them to your advantage. I get so nervous still all the time. You'll see me at the side of the stage shaking it before I go on stage. It's my little ritual. But use those nerves in a good way. Go on that stage and use that as your kick and your drive. I personally try to think that there's no one there. So when I perform, I'm never performing to a crowd. I almost like blanket a little bit. Like, obviously you are performing to the people, but I don't look as them people. Like, I treat them as just little blobs. So for me, I actually find a venue where I can see everyone a lot harder than a big venue where there's thousands of people. I find that more scary. If I was going to do a magic society or a little art center or something where I can see every single person, that scares me more than going up and doing the Opera House. If there's thousands of people there, I don't mind so much, but I just don't like to see them. So yeah, use those nerves and use them as your kind of driving force, and then just find that way that you can perform, like find that thing that it is. So staring at the lights or finding someone in the back row that you think looks a bit strange with their hat and you can focus on that, or just find something that works for you.
That's great. That's great advice. That's brilliant advice. So you obviously talked earlier on about progressing in your career, and you know, you went from jumping in and out of boxes and to actually having a part in the show where you're presenting the magic yourself, so that it's Amethyst is no longer, hey, it's Danny and there's a girl that gets in the box. This is Danny and Steph, which is the way that the act's branded, and it's brilliant. It really is. Was that a difficult step, and what made you kind of, because nobody would have said, Steph, it's not a problem, just get in the boxes, you don't have to worry about it, but it's a real, you know, you have to really push your comfort zone to kind of do what you've done and take it to the next level. Was that as a desire? Like, what was your reasoning behind kind of wanting to take that next step?
I think it kind of just happened naturally. It was quite organic. We've always worked as a duo, so we've always made sure wherever we can, it's Danny and Steph, not Danny and, you know, the girl that gets in the box. Even if it was just me getting in the box, I'm doing just as much work. So we've always done it as a duo with everything we've kind of done. Our home life's very much that. The way we work the business is very much that. We both have our things that we do that makes it work. But then I liked performing. I liked talking and presenting. And I think that just naturally went from saying the odd little bit here to all of a sudden we were doing the tricks together. Most of the time we still do it as a duo. I wouldn't always go off and do a whole routine on myself, but a lot of the time it's actually me doing the trick and Danny isn't now. So I'll be doing all the magic-y side of things and he'll just be there presenting a little bit, but it's kind of evolved into that. So we do the Enchanted Kettle together. I love that. That's absolutely brilliant now. So that's obviously not getting in a box anymore and it's great. I like being able to know that I'm doing things and they don't know that I'm doing them. And I think that's absolutely brilliant. I love it. Glass presentation we do together. That's really good. We do all kinds of things now and it's just kind of evolved. And I like that side of it. I'm not sure if I like it more than the illusions, but I'm really enjoying it. And it's fun to kind of see how that's evolving and where it's going now and where it's going to go. Like, maybe I'll have my own little show one day and it'll just be me and Danny can stay at home and look after Rex.
You can be a house husband. You can go out and do the step show. I think that's great. I think that's
I'd love it.
That's great. So on the subject of, you know, you've talked about a lot of the magic that you do, not just obviously the illusions now and a lot of other stuff. But one thing I think, at least for me, defines Amethyst is the music that you have. Whether it's an illusion or it's a front of cloth piece or whatever it is, the music fits your act perfectly. And I've actually pointed to Amethyst in the past and said, you want to know how music's done right? Look at these guys, because they've just nailed it. Musicality is so important when you're performing on stage. Again, it's something that a lot of close-up magicians don't think of. And I know that you spend a lot of time, we talked about this, didn't we, at Ferrybridge? You spend a lot of time thinking about music. Have you got any advice for people that are going on stage that want to use music in their act? Because, you know, whether it be just playing in the background when they present or being a piece to music, what should people look for when they're finding that piece? Because it has to be unique as well, doesn't it? It has to be different. Like, what's the process?
I think you need to kind of find your niche. So Amethyst definitely has kind of a soundtrack and all of our music follows that kind of genre. I always describe it as we're a little bit grungy with some of our music and we don't necessarily just pick what's in the charts at the moment or the biggest hit. We look for music that's maybe done acoustically or by someone's done a cover of something. But we always try and keep the same kind of vibe going with all of our music so that we don't all of a sudden throw in some sort of 70s rave track because it just wouldn't work with what we do. So I think that's good. Kind of find your niche, find what your feel for your show, what you want that to feel like, and then just listen to lots of different music. We screenshot things all the time when we're just listening to music, like, oh, this would be good for something. Don't know what, but at some point, this piece of track would be wonderful. And we usually find the music before we found the trick, not the other way around. So we have that idea of that song, and then we find the trick or the illusion that's going to work with that song, rather than trying to find music for something we've already kind of got.
That's really, 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 yeah. Because I've always struggled really with that, to be honest. It's something I'm tone deaf, to be honest, Steph. I can't never. I'm dreadful at that. The other thing I want to ask you about, which again, I've always thought you guys do so well, is the choreography of movement when you're actually presenting, whether it be a front of cloth piece or an illusion. The choreography, some illusion acts that are just ridiculously over at the top and some that are just very understated. And I think you strike the balance perfectly all the way through. Is that your dance background coming in here, or where does the choreography come from with Amethyst? When you've got a new illusion that you want to put into the show, like, is it you that take, with your dance background, that takes the lead on choreography, or Is it Danny?
Yeah, I get a lot of it just kind of happens quite naturally. So we don't really have any dancing in our show. We've always not avoided it, but we didn't want to be one of those acts, which there are some fabulous acts that come on and they do all this wonderful dancing, but we're a little bit older, like it just doesn't have the right vibe for us. So we don't come on and do kicks and spins and splits and all this stuff, although I'd love it. We don't do it. We've had dancers in the show before and we've done it then when we've had dancers, but as me and Danny, we never kind of put in any of those flourishes. We don't finish the show and come forward and do like a nice big back bend like some illusion actors do. We just never done that. So it's all very much about just how you feel the music and using those accent points. So when you come out of the box, making sure you hit the right note on the music. That's kind of more where we go through. And it just comes with rehearsing. We don't go in and go, right, we're going to do this on this count and this on this count. We just let it happen naturally. So we'll be rehearsing, we'll be doing the trick, and we'll go, ah, this works. Let's do this arm here, or let's make sure that you pop out of the box there, or let's make sure the trick wheels on this beat. So it's thinking about everything, the whole picture, just how you come on stage, how you exit stage, everything.
That's perfect. That's amazing. Wow. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about other aspects. So you've obviously got all of the illusions and everything, and Amethyst has been going for a very, very long time. You've transitioned, I don't want to say transitioned because you're still doing the illusion act, but you've branched off, you've kind of branded, you've almost got like a separate brand.
Yeah.
The science show. And lots of other things that you're doing with that. Where did that come from? What was that? Where did, like, you're busy enough as it is. Like, what, you know, now you're doing this as well.
Yeah, my new love. It's my baby. I absolutely love the science show. It makes me so happy. Where did it come from? Oh, my goodness. So we sold it to a holiday park years ago. This was a long, long time, maybe 9 years ago. Hadn't got the show. We just sold the concept. And they were like, yeah, that's great. We'll give you these dates. And me and Danny went, oh, we've got no show. So we put this science and magic show together, something completely different, totally out of our comfort zone, not something we've done before. And it toured around the holiday parks for a couple of years. We enjoyed it. It was great. Then our very dear friend said to us, have you thought about doing this as a theatre tour? And we were like, nah, I don't think it would really sell. No one would come see this. And he went, let me get you a few dates. Is that all right? And we were like, yeah, that's fine. Get us a couple of dates. He came back the next day and said, I've looked at your date sheet and everything, and I hope you don't mind, but I've booked you 72 dates in. And we were like, what? So we went from kind of just doing it at the holiday parks to the whole show evolved into the theatre show. And we've been doing it for the last 3 years now. Absolutely loving life. It's brilliant. People really enjoy the show. It's wonderful to see the kids learning because it's got the educational side as well as the magic. It's just really good fun, but very, very different to Amethyst. And I think you're correct in saying it's almost a different part. It's, I wouldn't even call it Amethyst. It's kind of its own entity.
And you're on stage blowing stuff up and...
Yep, making a mess. Someone said to us, it's a science show crossed with a panto. It's getting the kids screaming and having loads of fun. We teach science. We mix it with magic. There's mess everywhere. And we just run around in our lab coats having a brilliant time. It's great.
Right, because, you know, a lot of science shows that I've seen, they're very understated because the person running it is not an entertainer. And obviously you guys are coming into it from an entertainer background.
Yeah.
So you can make it fun and entertaining, which is obviously going to have the kids more interested in it, which is going to be help them because it becomes then very educational as well. Brilliant.
Yeah, very true. Danny's nephew got us to go and do it at his show in the very, very early days at his school, sorry. And he said, oh, we've had this scientist in, he's done a science show and it was just so boring. He was meant to be a mad professor and he wasn't. So we definitely said, well, that's not what you want. It needs to be fun. The kids need to be having a great time so that they're learning, but without realizing. Yeah, I think that's very important. Just everyone's got to have fun.
So the question is, what do you prefer doing? The science show or Amethyst?
Think I could pick one because I do really love them both, but they're on such different playing fields. they're not comparable. They're just two completely different things. So you get a different, like a different feeling from doing both. There's nothing like going on and doing the illusion show and pulling that cloth away and that helicopter's there and you hear that from the audience. Like, there's nothing like that feeling. But the science show, the kids come up to you afterwards and they're like, oh my gosh, I loved it when you made this blow up and this was going. It's just a different feeling. Yeah, they're both wonderful, but in their different ways.
That's amazing. That's great. Well, I want to carry on talking about some stuff, but I want to circle back. One thing I forgot to ask or mention is that obviously a big part of Amethyst as well is escapology. Now, I don't know much about escapology. Ryland is currently trying to learn to be an escapologist, which scares the death out of me, but whatever. I know Danny is a very renowned escapologist. So two questions on this. I don't know the answer. So I don't know. Right. I know nothing about escapology. So I hope I'm not like saying something that's insulting to escapologists, but I know that there's ways of doing escapology that are tricky magic methods and there's ways that are doing real. I'm fairly sure that Danny spends a lot of time doing real escapology. So my question is, A, does that worry you? Like your husband is basically putting himself in a situation where he might actually get hurt. And big follow-up question. And have you ever actually said, right, you know, we're taking this out of the show, Danny. We're done with this. No more escapology. And B, have you ever thought about doing that side of things yourself as well?
So the escapology, again, we kind of have all these different branches and they're so different. Like there's Amethyst illusions and then the escapology, like they're just different. Yes, it scares me. I have a weird love for it though, which kind of grew. So again, early days, Dad used to never tell me anything in the early days. He just get me to do these things and I wouldn't realize quite what I was getting involved in. So early days, he got me to strap him up on a crane. He just said, oh, just put this on my feet and hook it on there. And then he went 120 foot in the air and did a straitjacket escape. Me not really realizing if I'd done it wrong, he would fall to his death and, you know, didn't really think anything of it. I was young and naive. So escapology has always been there. And I just kind of thought about the dangerous side until Rex came about and it made me look at it in a very different light. So we've kind of changed how we do a few things now with the escapology. There's certain things that we've said, nah, not doing. So we used to do a stunt show as well. And Danny used to do the whole shoot the apple off my head. Not happening now. We're not shooting any apples off my head. Now we've got the little one here. It's just not happening. But other sides of it, I think as long as you're careful and you put that preparation in and you always have someone there to look after you, that's the main thing. You need to, like Danny obviously has me. I know the escapes inside out. I know what to do if something went wrong. But it doesn't mean it's not scary. I've delved into the world of escapology. Like I said, I've got a bit of a love for it. I've got my things that I do. So I've got a water tank that I do. I have a little aluminium box that I escape out of, which I love. You're not going to find me hanging in the air though, off a crane. That's not happening. Don't love it quite that much.
I wouldn't do that at all, not in a million years. No. That's amazing. Good grief. Actually, I want to ask another question.
Yeah.
You mentioned Rex. You're obviously, you and Danny have a child now, which is amazing. I have two kids. And time management for me is so difficult now that I've got kids. It's just like it's very difficult to like balance home life and work life sometimes. Now, one thing that's defined you and Danny with everything you've done, the stunt show, the escapology, the illusion show, the science show, you guys are busy. Like we talked about your date sheet. You would like, I mentioned this to you at Ferrybridge. I would literally just go to holiday parks and I was busy doing holiday parks and they were all just Amethyst or we just had Amethyst. They you guys are always just so busy. You're everywhere. You could be working 365 days a week if you want, a year if you wanted to. Like, have you found it like that you now kind of maybe turn some stuff down because of Rex, or you kind of have to say, well, we can't take everything on?
It's hard from that point of view because our life is Amethyst. It's not just we go off and do a gig. There's all the stuff you have to do behind the scenes as well. So our whole life is our work. And it's obviously making sure we've got that work-life balance now. Beforehand, it didn't matter because me and Danny loved it. It's what we did. But we've got a little one to think about. And I don't want his whole life just being magic. I want to make sure that he's off doing what he wants to do. So we've definitely changed things a little bit from not the quantity we're doing, but we're making sure that we do have the ability to be at home a little bit more. It's always that thing, isn't it, that you shouldn't say no to work because, well, we never know when the next gig's going to come. It's the whole thing of being self-employed. It's really hard to kind of turn down a job. That's a very difficult thing to do, but just changing how we do things and making that conscious effort to make sure that we do have some home time and some downtime and time that we can kind of relax and be with our little boy. But in that breath, he goes to bed, and then that's when we get the laptops out and we're doing all the office work and the job, because it still all needs to be done. It's our job, so we have to make money and we need to do the things.
Absolutely. Which brings me to the next question. You are a mom.
Yeah.
You are traveling all over the place doing shows. You've now got a very successful theatre show. On top of everything that we've talked about, you then go, you know what we need to do? We need to go and invest in a magic dealership. That's what we need, because we've got a spare hour every month, so we need to fill it somehow. Like, where did that come from? Because Castle Magic, for the people that don't know, is yours and Danny's company. And it's been around for a very, very long time. It's got a great reputation. I remember first getting into magic and going to the Blackpool Magic Convention for the first time back when the dealers were just around the horseshoe and there was no other area. I'm so old. And Castle Magic were always there. And you now own Castle Magic, which is amazing, because it's so good that two people that care so much about magic are actually continuing its legacy. But where did that come from? Because, like, it's nuts.
Yes, we've always kind of dabbled. So we had Workshop 13, which was escapology, handcuffs, padlocks. Danny's got a passion for making gimmicked handcuffs and gimmicked padlocks. He loves it. So we had that anyway. That's always been there in the background. We've always used it when it came to doing kind of TV consultancy and stuff. It was a handy thing to have. And it was an extra bit of income. It was great. Castle was up for sale. Mike Shepherd was selling it, and Mike's a very, very dear friend. And at first, we didn't really think anything of it. But then he was like, "Oh, I don't think it's going to sell. Like, I don't think anyone's, you know, maybe this is the end of the day of Castle Magic." And we didn't want to see Castle go, so we said, "You know what? We'll take Castle on. We can merge it with Workshop 13. We go to the conventions anyway doing Workshop 13. So what's the difference if we take some secondhand things with us as well and continue Castle?" And kind of that's where it came from. It was us wanting to keep it alive and keep it going. Like you said, it's got a wonderful reputation. It's been around for a long, long time. And we've got a bit of a love for it. Like, Danny loves bulk. As you can see, this is Danny's office. He loves looking at magic. We always need magic when we're doing TV consultancy and stuff. So it's handy. It's a handy little thing to have. We have another unit just full of boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes of secondhand magic. So if we need anything, we kind of have our own library of things that we can go delve through and find for any consultancy work we're doing. And then it's a nice little extra stream that just kind of sits there quietly at the moment. We're not pushing it too much, but one day if we need it, it's there, and, you know, we can make it bigger and better and see where it goes.
Amazing. And what's interesting is it is very, very successful. I mean, obviously, it's continued to be very successful. And I wanted to, it kind of leads me into something that I want to talk about. And I have experience of this from my own point of view. Like, I run a couple of different companies, all to do with magic. And here's the thing, I'm the face of the company. So when people see me on YouTube, it's me. And when people ring up, a lot of the time, it's me. But in reality, it's my wife, Sarah, that's actually making all of the magic happen behind the scenes. If it was left up to me, I would be bankrupt with a warehouse of really cool shit. Like, that's basically the truth of the matter, if I'm being completely honest. And I've seen that with you. I've been hanging around Castle Magic with Ryland, and he's been looking at the handcuffs, and I see people come up to the Castle Magic stand and they want to speak to Danny. And Danny's like, I'll speak to Steph. And they don't realize that it's you they need to speak to, because Danny has not got a clue. And it's you that really is the person that's organizing all of this and making all of this happen, and knows 90% of the questions that people have. They can be directing it to you. Do you find that that's even now like a attitude that people have in magic? Because it is a very male-dominated industry, let's be honest. Do you find that has it been hard dealing with that sometimes?
Yes, I think it's got better over recent years. And I don't know if it's just that people know me a little bit more now, or if I would like to say it's people's kind of views on women in magic is changing now. But I've always had it since day one, where people would just blank me and just want to talk to Danny when it could have been me that was even doing the thing. I'm very, very lucky that Danny's always been fabulous with things like that. And he'll always be like, well, it was Steph that's doing it, so you need to talk to Steph. Where I don't know if everyone would do something like that. So I'm very lucky that I have Danny as a work partner and my partner. He's very, always pushed me and raised me up when I need it. So that's wonderful. But yes, it's there still. People just don't see girls or women in the same kind of level as the men. And it's crazy because we're doing the same stuff. And you know, we're working just as hard, so yeah, come and talk to us guys.
Absolutely. Which brings me into you going into the magic circle, which is fantastic. Like, it's recently that you've joined the magic circle. It's wonderful to see more female magicians going into the magic circle. How did that come to be? Like, where did
so it kind of, like we were just saying, I've been in magic 11 years now, and it's taken me all this time to be able to be a member. One, I was always told that an assistant couldn't be a member of the magic circle, that, you know, if you do illusions and you're the one getting in the box, you can't be a member. And I also, there was a couple of obstacles, because, like, you know, there's a lot of politics in magic, so there was a few obstacles in the way as well. But last year at the London Magic Convention, Marvin Burglass was there, and he was chatting to me about all of this, and he was like, but look what you do, like, you know, you should be in the magic circle. So I said, well, okay then, if you're happy. And he said he would forward me, and then Andy Nyman said he would second me. I would put my audition together and go audition to kind of hopefully get in, trying to kind of put a video audition together, because it's a little bit hard to get some of the things that I do into the magic circle theater, and yeah, it's not easy. So we were trying to put a video audition together when I got a phone call saying that they put it to council and they would love me to be a member. So that was like such a lovely surprise, because I wasn't expecting that. Now I'm a member.
You don't need to audition. There's people that have done as more for magic than you in this country. Like, the amount of shows that you've done, the amount of people in the audiences that are probably now into magic because they've seen Amethyst, or they've seen one of your science shows, or they've seen one of your stunt shows, or they've seen something. You have probably done more for people getting into and enjoying magic than probably 99% of the magicians in the UK.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's very, I think that side's very important to the both of us, especially with like the younger generation. It's very important to kind of hopefully inspire and push people. So we have the Neptune Magic Society, which is our own little magic junior club that we kind of help run. And yeah, I love all that side of it.
Well, obviously, at the most recent Young Magician of the Year, you were invited along as a judge. So not only are you now in the magic circle, the magic circle are saying, you are the person that we want to have judge this competition. So, I mean, that shows that the faith that they have in you, right?
Yeah, that was amazing. A very hard day. I wasn't expecting it to be so hard, but oh my goodness, those kids were insane. And yeah, very difficult job, but wonderful job.
Yeah, the kids, I mean, it's in safe hands. A lot of those acts, I think, were better than a lot of acts I see adult magicians do, if I'm going to be completely honest with myself.
100%.
So here's the question for you. This has been an amazing interview to find out more about you. I've got a couple of other questions. Now, the first one is, I alluded to this at the beginning of the interview, but you're the driving force behind a lot of the marketing of Amethyst. You know, we've talked not just Amethyst, but science shows as well. Especially, you were telling me a story at Ferrybridge that, or Danny was telling me a story at Ferrybridge, where you guys had the science show booked into a theater, and they hadn't really done their job properly, and there were only like 40 or 50 tickets that were sold, and it was only 2 weeks away, and you were like, right, okay, hold my beer, and like literally 2 weeks later, you'd done some marketing jiggery pokery, and it had sold out.
Yeah,
one of the big things that a lot of magicians struggle with is marketing. You know, it's like, oh, I wish I could get more gigs. I'm a great magician, but I don't know how to get gigs. You talked about, you know, being self-employed and where's the next gig coming from. But you've never had an issue with getting gigs because of the reputation that you have, the relationship you've beat up with people, and also your skill as a marketer. Do you have any advice for people on how to generate gigs or how to market yourself? Because you've done it so well for so many years.
It's hard. It's a learning curve. Like, I've had to just, like, things change all the time. So it's constantly learning what the new trends are. There's so much that I could do that I don't do because I don't know. Like, I don't know how to do it yet. With Amethyst, we were very lucky. Like you said, it very much came off our reputation and things just snowballed from there with Amethyst. We've always been very lucky with that. But when we started doing Top Secret in theatres, well, no one knows who Danny and Steph are. No one knows who Amethyst is. Like, we're just two people. We can't ride off our names because we're not celebrities. So we very much ride off that publicity and that marketing. We've got a great publicity photo. I think that's done us a world of good. But marketing's changing. Like, once upon a time, you used to send your posters off and they'd pin them on the wall, but everything is social now. It's all social media based, and that world of social media is constantly evolving. But that's what sells tickets now. That's where it all is. So I've done a lot of research on kind of Facebook ads and all that kind of side of it. There's, you know, there's things that I haven't even delved into, like TikTok and doing all your reels on Instagram, but that what helps, that what sells these days. So yeah, it's been a huge learning curve, but put the time in, go and do some research. You can do it. You just have to put the time in. You're not going to sell tickets if you don't do anything. If you just sit on your bum and be like, not sold any tickets, you have to put the time in. And it's time consuming, it's hard, it's a constant job, especially if you're doing it yourself. If you've, you know, if you've got your own marketing department, that's a different thing. But if you're just doing it yourselves to kind of try and save money, it's, yeah, a lot of work, but doable.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's that old expression, show business. It's the business side is more as important, if not more important than the show side. You have the best act in the world, but if nobody's watching you, you got nothing, right?
Yeah, it's not just all glitz and glam. It's all the stuff that, you know, happens behind the scenes as well. And there's a lot of stuff.
Like you say, you know, Rex goes to bed, you guys have got your laptops out, and that's what you're doing. That you want to know the secret to Steph and Danny's success? Hard work.
And we don't go to bed.
No sleep and hard work, and that's the best thing. Awesome. So I'm going to ask you one more question, which is, let's be clear, you've been in magic for 11 years, and if you decided today, right now, when you get off this call, you're retiring. You have had a career over the last 11 years that most people could only dream of. You've traveled all over the world at the highest level. You performed illusions in front of thousands of people. You've gone on theater tours. You've done so much. There's most magicians watching it and probably thinking, I wish I could do a tenth, including me. Wow, I wish I could do a tenth of what you're doing. Like, if you retired right now, your legacy is set, genuinely. But you're not going to. I know how hard you work. I know how ambitious you are. And I know when you and Danny get together, just like anything could possibly happen. So what goals, aspirations do you have moving forward over the next few years? Is there anything on your magical bucket list that you'd like to tick off? Or what have you got planned, or do you want to continue to do?
We always kind of say, just take one day at a time, because you don't know where things are going to go. But as long as you still love it, and as long as you're still excited, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, then just keep doing what you're doing. Just like, as long as I'm happy being on that stage, I'm not going to retire. So it's not going to happen anytime soon. But Really, we just want to keep going, just keep doing what we're doing, keep making people smile, hopefully, and hopefully people still enjoy what we do. And we'll, yeah, just see where we end up and see what exciting things are on the next page, because you never know, because we go anywhere.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. And if people who are watching this want to come and watch you, where can they find out about dates to see Amethyst and Top Secret Science Show? Where is that information? Because Ryan is bugging me to, like, he basically just wants to follow you around every day. Like, I think he wants to be your gopher, really. I think that's it. Give up school. Just, yeah, that's where he's at right now. So so where can people go and see you? Where can people find out about where you are next?
So the science show, all our dates are on Facebook, so Top Secret, The Magic of Science, and all the tour dates are on there. We are getting a new website, but it's not there yet. So that'll be Top Secret Live when it is up and running. But yeah, Facebook's where you'll find all our dates and you can see where we are and what we're doing. The same with Amethyst, we just kind of pop everything on social media. And yeah, it would be lovely to see some people there. Just make sure you come and say hi. We like to say hi to everyone.
Absolutely. And if people want to check out Castle Magic, because just so people know, we've referenced Castle Magic. Predominantly, you sell a lot of secondhand magic. And when I go and look at your stall and I'm flicking the amount of things that you've got, I'm like, oh, I remember that from 30 years ago, from 20 years ago. There's a lot of hidden gems. And Danny tells me when I look at the stand, and it can be like three tables big. He's like, yeah, this is like a hundredth of what we've got. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. Is there a website where people can check this out, or is it a case of really going on to a convention and seeing you at a convention? Like, what's the best way to find
we
out?
We have a website, so Castle Magical Services is the website. We don't have an awful lot on there because we work it around touring, so it makes it difficult for posting out. But when we're home, we do pop things on there, and people can email us if they're looking for anything particular. But if you want to get a good nosy and, you know, have a good rummage to see what we book, because we have a lot of stuff, all the conventions. So we tend to be at kind of most of the conventions of the stand, and you can come and have a good rummage through the books and all the little bits and see what there is. But yeah, always email us or check the website as well.
That's fantastic. And I'm going to finish this interview, but I have one final question for everybody that's watched this. And by the way, I said to you at Ferrybridge, this is an amazing, that I can't, I really hoped you'd say yes to the interview. And I'm so glad you did. This has genuinely been one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done. If you've got one last piece of advice that you can give to anybody that's watching this about anything to do with magic or performing or whatever, if you've got one last piece of advice, what would that be?
Always love what you do and work hard.
That is amazing. That is perfect. Steph, thank you so much for jumping on the channel. You're way better to interview than Danny. Just so don't remember that. This has been an amazing interview. And I want to say thank you. Thank you so much for everything that you've done for Magic. On behalf of the Magic community, thank you. You're an inspiration. You really are. And please carry on doing what you're doing, because you guys are fantastic. And I'm going to say one more thing as well. Ferrybridge is going to continue. I am going to be there next year. This is now my new favorite magic convention, so I'm going to be there every single year. If people want to come to Ferrybridge, obviously that's on Facebook as well, so they can just go and check that out. People need to come and support you in every single way. But Steph, this has been a fantastic interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
No problem. Guys, do me a favor. You've watched the interview. It's around about an hour. Leave a comment down below. Let Steph know what you thought of the interview. And then if you're in the UK, go and watch Amethyst on tour. And if you have kids or teenagers, go and take them to Top Secret Magic. And make sure you go check out Castle Magic when you're at any local conventions, because these guys are amazing. Steph, one more time, thank you so much. Guys, on behalf of Steph, thanks for watching, and I'll see you again soon. My name's Craig, and this has been Taught Magic on Magic TV.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel,
Magic TV,
which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.